is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, September 20th, 2019. I'm Buster Olney, producing back in Bristol, Troy Farkas. News and notes of the day, Don Mattingly and the Marlins have agreed to a contract extension. It's expected to be a two-year deal beyond this season. Yesterday, we got word that the Yankees' Domingo Germán was placed on leave under baseball's domestic violence policy. Jeff Passan talked about this with Kevin Negandhi on the 6 o'clock Sports Center.
Well, they know that there was an incident that was reported to Major League Baseball on Tuesday morning. There is no police report from that incident, meaning Major League Baseball had a whistleblower call up and say, hey, something happened. Tuesday was spent investigating it, and on Wednesday, the league went to the Major League Baseball Players Association and said, this is what we've got. And the MLBPA could have said, we're not going to agree to place Domingo Germán on administrative leave. That was not the case. They agreed to put him on this 7-day leave pending a further investigation that could ultimately wind up in a suspension or discipline.
Before the Yankees game on Thursday, manager Aaron Boone talked about the Germán situation.
Set baseball aside, this is a bigger issue, obviously. And you know, when you hear the words domestic violence, it's one of those things that stops you in your tracks. So we just want to be part of, and I give Major League Baseball and the Players Association credit for doing their part in, you know, several years ago trying to be ahead of this and putting disciplinary action in place to, you know, hopefully being a part of the solution to, you know, what is a problem in our society, obviously.
At Yankee Stadium last night, the Yankees with an opportunity to clinch the American League East. They faced the Angels, and in the bottom of the second inning, an MVP candidate gave them a lead.
Driven out to deep right center field, giving chase is Goodwin, turning, looking, see ya! A three-run home run for LeMahieu, and the Yankees are on the board. It's 3-0 Bombers.
Michael Kay on WPIX, and the Yankees rolled from there. This is what it sounded like in the ninth inning on the Yankees radio network.
And the 1-2. Struck him out swinging. Ball game over. American League East over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
And Aaron Boone talked after the game about having larger aspirations.
We want to be a championship team. That's where the focus is. How people look at it and judge it, formulate your own opinions. Everyone's going to have a different one. We'll move on from today and really concentrate on getting ready for the playoffs and moving on in the playoffs. So I don't really pause in that sense to say what it all means. We're proud of this and enjoy it.
The Twins trying to close out the American League Central in the days ahead. They face the Royals, and Nelson Cruz had himself a day.
And the 0-1 pitch, a high fly ball, center field, that's it deep. Mejia going back, on the track, at the wall, home run, Nelson Cruz, number two tonight. A three-run shot in the third, a two-run blast in the seventh, 8-5 Twins.
Corey Provis on the Treasure Island Baseball Network, that would be the final score. The Indians played host to the Tigers, and Yasiel Puig helped them seize control.
Puig lines one down the left field line. That's headed toward the corner, and it takes a couple of hops up against the wall. That will score Santana. Puig is into second with a stand-up double, and the Indians now lead 2-0.
That from WTAM 1100. Mike Clevinger pitched well. The final score was 7-0. At the end of the night, the Tigers, a run differential of minus 306. The Red Sox and the Giants and Xander Bogaerts continues to have a great season.
Pitching out of the stretch is 2-2 pitch, and there's another little bloop in a right field. So everything going the Red Sox way. Two runs will score as Slater fields it in very shallow right over by the line. Bogaerts has his second hit. He's now driven in three runs.
Sean McDonough, WEEI 93.7 FM. Boston wins 5-4. The Braves played the Phillies, and Ronald Acuna Jr. continues to have a tremendous year.
Nola deals. 0-2 is smashed deep to left. This thing is going to sprout wings and fly away. Wow! Home run number 40 of the season. It's 2-0 Braves as Acuna hit one into another county.
That from 680, the fan, the Braves go on to win 5-4. The Phillies go into this weekend series against the Indians with a high level of desperation, trying to hang in the National League wildcard race. We've got the Phillies and the Indians tonight on ESPN, and we've got them on Sunday Night Baseball as well. The Brewers have been playing great since Christian Yelich got hurt, responding under need, and they did it again on Thursday.
Grisham hits that one sharply in the gap left center. That's going to go to the wall. Shaw on his way to third, and he's going to try to score. Here comes a throw. It is a wild one, and Shaw is in. Throw to third base into left field. Grisham with a little league home run.
Brian Anderson on the Brewers Television Network. The Padres lose 5-1.
Deep center field.
The game.
It's gone!
Of the day.
The game of the day was in Wrigley Field, and this was after the Brewers game. The day had started with the Cubs and Brewers tied for the second wild card in the National League, three games behind the St. Louis Cardinals. Before this game, Cubs fans were surprised when Anthony Rizzo came out to stretch. We had heard early in the week after he rolled his ankle that he probably was going to miss the rest of the regular season. He'd been in a walking boot, but he played yesterday. And this is what happened in the bottom of the third inning against the Cardinals' Jack Flaherty.
The pitch, swing and a fly ball, belted into left center. Track, wall, oh, home run, Anthony Rizzo. Welcome back. Opposite field, ties the game at one. And they're going nuts at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, that sound from ESPN Radio. They're going nuts. An emotional return for Anthony Rizzo, limping his way through the early innings of that game. But that was it for the Cubs in their offense against Jack Flaherty, who was absolutely dominant over eight innings. And Harrison Bader helped the Cardinals build a 4-1 lead.
The 1-1. Swing and a line drive, base hit into left center. Coming around third is DeYoung. He'll score easily. Yachty on his way to third, and it's an RBI double for Harrison Bader. Two runs batted in tonight for the Cardinals center fielder. Now it's 4-1 St. Louis.
And with a 4-1 lead after Flaherty went out of the game, Carlos Martinez came on to try to close it out. It didn't go well.
Ground ball. That is a fair ball and down the line towards the right field corner. Zobrist on his way to second with an RBI double. It's 4-2, and the tying run is in scoring position.
And now the 0-2 pitch. Contreras dribbles one toward third. Going to be a tough play. The throw to the plate. It's not in time. Everybody is safe. A run scores. It's 4-3. Base hit for Contreras. Bryant scores. Safe at third is Baez. Listen to this crowd.
0-1. And Hayward hits a ground ball right side. Diving stop by Edmund. Throws the first. Tying run scores.
Yep, the Cubs came back and they tied the game. That sound from John Smoltz, Joe Davis on Fox, and Pat Hughes on 670. The score. The two teams went into the 10th inning. Tied at 4-4. Craig Kimbrell, just off the injured list, entered the game for the Cubs. Matt Carpenter was at the plate.
Carpenter wears one. He's ready for the first pitch, and he's swinging. This is a drive into left center. High and long. Goodbye. Home run, Matt Carpenter.
Cubs have their guts ripped out. They lose 5-4, and Joe Maddon talked about Rizzo's surprise return to the lineup and the situation for the Cubs.
I was not being disingenuous. I did not know. And so I went in that in my office, and then all of a sudden Theo and the guys come down in, and including the trainer, and say that, you know, Riz is actually moving around pretty well, and he wants to play. And I said, oh, really? So he went down to the cage, swung in the cage, and they said it looked normal. So you saw me outside before the game watching him run, and we were just trying to determine whether or not he can do this. And the doctors were all there, and they gave the support, and he said he can do it, and, of course, he showed that he can.
And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the Cubs' loss coming up with Carl Ravitch. But before we leave that off, Troy, how about you tell our listeners the latest on your friend zone situation?
Yeah, so Buster, I'm trying to up my game here as I'm still firmly entrenched in the friend zone. So I'm doing that with some help from our friends at Bespoke Post. And, you know, when you're a busy person like me, when you're constantly on the go, grinding away at the office or hanging out with your friends or with your friend zone people, There's not much time to think about upgrading your style or apartment. Not enough time to do that. That's why I love getting a new box of awesome from Bespoke Post every week. These guys, they're out scouting for quality and unique products to send in each box. Now you can experience it too at boxofawesome.com. And Buster, my favorite box I recently got is the Refresh Box. What it has a daily refresh bar. It's peppermint and sea salt flavor. I got some really cool toothpaste, some construction paste for the hair, because I know this girl I'm seeing, she likes it when I slick my hair back a little. There's some face cleanser, and all comes in a cool leather bag to take it all in. So, Buster, to get started, our listeners can visit boxofawesome.com. All you do is answer a few short questions that'll help you guys get a feel for the boxes that'll best go with your style. Whether you're in search of the perfect drink, a well-kept pad, or just jet-setting in style, Bespoke Post improves your life one box at a time. Each box goes for under $50, but has more than $70 worth of unique gear waiting inside for you. The first of each month, you receive an email with your box details. You'll have 5 days to change colors and sizes or add extra goods to your box. And if you're not feeling that month's box, then you simply skip it. There's so many different options out there. I was so amazed when I started searching through. There's from barrel aging kits to limited edition cigars, weekender bags, classy dop kits, Bespoke Post offers essential goods and guidance for the modern man. And to receive 20% off your first subscription box, go to boxofawesome.com and enter code BBTN at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, code BBTN for 20% off your first box. Bespoke Post, theme boxes for guys that give a damn or want to get out of the friend zone.
All aboard, it's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
Yeah, the Rabbit Train rolling along. Carl Ravitch, of course, the host of Baseball Tonight, play-by-play man for ESPN. Where are you headed today, Carl?
Rabbit Train pulling into Cleveland, Ohio. Another big series starts. The Indians, who no longer can beat up on the Detroit Tigers, now have to deal with a desperate Philadelphia Philly team. We got a chance to see the MVP of the All-Star game on the mound, Shane Bieber. Terry Francona, of course, historically great. His team's in the second half. So we got meaningful impact games on a Friday night. Indians tonight against the Phillies with studio updates, Buster, as you know, on every important game the minute it happens. So this is a great time of year for ESPN with regards to Major League Baseball. I'm just thrilled to be a part of it tonight with Tim and Ed.
It's huge, and it's so fun to go from game to game to game. That's what I was doing Thursday, and I know you guys today, at some point or another, are going to talk about the Cardinals and Cubs, who had an amazing game last night. You know, so much drama in this game, so much pressure on the Cubs. Anthony Rizzo, we were hearing that he was going to be out for the rest of the regular season, but he comes out to warm up before the game. He hits a home run, but then from that point on, Jack Flaherty was so crazy good, completely dominant. Then the Cardinals turn it over to Carlos Martinez, and he kind of melts down on the mound. The Cubs come back. In the end, Craig Kimbrel on the mound, Matt Carpenter hits a home run in a year of real struggles. I got to tell you, Carl, if the Cardinals had lost that game, not good. But it wouldn't have been devastating because they're in a good place at the top of the National League Central. That was a gut punch for the Cubs last night to lose the game the way they did. What do you think?
It certainly felt that way, given the way they came back. And as soon as Flaherty, who you just talked about, came out of the game, you know, Smoltz made some really good points, I thought, during that telecast. The leadoff walk is different than a leadoff home run, a leadoff double, a leadoff hit. When you allow a walk, it at least allows the offensive team to think, well, maybe he's not as sharp as they think he was. And Carlos Martinez wasn't very good last night, and the Cubs took advantage of it, tied it up. I think the fact that they came back, I think the idea that in the half inning before Rizzo homered, he literally looked like he couldn't field a bunt, he couldn't run, couldn't put pressure on his ankle, came up with his Kirk Gibson moment there when he homered. And it really felt, for all intents and purposes, the way they came back, the way he homered, the Cubs are going to win this game. I mean, they have to win this game. And then Carpenter does that. Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's a gut punch, but I've learned, and I know you have too. I mean, heck, look at the way the Brewers are playing without their best player. In this sport, at this time, anything can happen. It certainly felt like a real blow to the Cubs, but gosh, you know, who knows? They could win five of the remaining six against the Cardinals. It's just impossible to predict. But yes, that certainly felt like the Cubs are going to win that game. And when they didn't, you're like, wow, that like there's a surprise. Anything can happen. Cardinals come back, and Carpenter, who stinks, hits a home run or has stunk this year. But apparently he does really well. I know he does at Wrigley Field. So,
yeah, he absolutely kills it there. And I got to tell you, Anthony Rizzo playing last night, starting, first off, tip of the cap to him. You know, this is a passionate guy. He's doing everything that he can to get on the field.
Yep.
But we've talked all year about how with the Yankees, it's the next man up, and we're going to have the Indians on Sunday Night Baseball. We talked on our production call yesterday about how the Indians have had a similar situation where guys have stepped up. It seemed a little odd to me that Rizzo would play in that game with 11 days left. Like, last day of the regular season, I think I would get it, but it's clear he's not healthy. And you'd almost hope that, you know, the Cubs would say, hey, you know what, next guy up, we'll be okay. If Rizzo can be on the field, let's save him for the Kirk Gibson moment, a pinch hit moment. That was a little odd to me, and it really reflected to me sort of the absolute desperation the Cubs are feeling right now.
I think there is some desperation there, and I think given the way Schwarber is playing, that they have, you know, some left-hand power there. Hayward, of course, he left him in against the lefty, and he delivered the run even on a ground ball to second base in a tough matchup against Andrew Miller. You know, look, and maybe they feel like we've survived so long with Nico Hoerner that when – and we did the game. When they had no Baez and no Rizzo, look, there was a flatness about them. There's no doubt about it. They were a different group. You know, Zobrist leading off. Look, you're not taking your best player out. You're taking your two best players out, and you're taking your heart out and your soul out when you don't have Baez and Rizzo in the lineup. And I hear what you're saying, but I think in the case of Anthony Rizzo, I think we've had this conversation about Max Scherzer. When Davey Martinez comes to the mound, Max Scherzer is going to dictate whether he's coming out of the game, or Max Scherzer is ultimately going to dictate whether he starts a game. Anthony Rizzo, I think, ultimately is going to dictate whether he plays in that game or not. And he wanted to play. And when you saw his elation after that homer and the enthusiasm which he brought to that bench after the home run, you could just see it in the Cubs' faces. Like, dude, this guy isn't for real. Like, what he just did can't really be happening. And he did it. So I think that having just seen them, there is a real deflating aspect to not having both of those dudes in the lineup, and I think Rizzo ultimately, you know, called his own card.
Boy, I don't know. I mean, if your ultimate goal is to win the World Series, I want to give him the best chance to be healthy at the end. It clearly doesn't help him to be on his feet for 9 innings. I would keep him on the bench for the Kirk Gibson moment. Have it, you know, that card to play late in the game, and to have faith in your other guys. Jack Flaherty is 20.
Would be, without him, we may not have a Kirk Gibson moment. But the chance of us getting another one is, we need Anthony Rizzo in the lineup.
Yep, no doubt about it. Jack Flaherty, 23 years old, and you mentioned John Smoltz. Yeah. I was watching that last night, and I was thinking, boy, it's perfect that Smoltz is doing this game, because when you watch Jack Flaherty, that's the guy he reminds you of, is John Smoltz. Over the next 15 years, if I could take the next decade and a half of any pitcher in baseball, I would take Jack Flaherty, because that guy looks like he's good. I mean, he's a beast, and he looks like he's going to be beast for a long, long time.
Yeah, I like his sort of his expressions, or lack thereof. I mean, there is clearly a fire that burns in there, and I think more so, like Smoltz even was talking about last night. You know, there are certain ballparks, there are certain environments, there are certain teams. Wrigley Field was one of those for him. You know, he loved being on that field. He thought that the confines were such that it kind of focused everything in on the moment. Flaherty certainly pitched that way. And for a Cardinals team that, you know, has depended on, you can go back to the Carpenters and then the Wainwrights. You know, at some point, Carmart was a little inconsistent, but there was ace quality about him. They finally now appear to have that guy. And at this time of year, you look around these teams, and we do it with all of them, whether it's the Astros with their discussion or debate, whether it's the Yankees with Severino's health, whether it's Manaea coming back, and in the case of the Indians, which one of the guys is going to start game one. Look, you need somebody that can go on the road. You need somebody that can pitch a game 7. And he has shown all year, but last night was a huge, huge start for him as a reminder, like, dude, I'm the guy, was great for the Cardinals. And let's give the Cardinals and Mike Schilt a lot of credit, because we certainly talked at the trade deadline, wait a minute, the Cardinals didn't do anything. How's that possible? They're dead, and obviously they're far from dead. They're very likely going to win the National League Central, and that's a tribute to them. I mean, look, they kind of must have known what they had there, and here we are with the Cardinals, you know, likely to win another division.
Yeah, no matter how far the Cardinals go, you know, and you would assume that there's a good chance that they are going to face the Braves in the first round if they were to advance, and they were to face the Dodgers, you know, if they were to face the Yankees, Astros, Oakland in the World Series, Jack Flaherty could match up with anybody. You know, that's
absolutely
how good this guy is. He could go toe-to-toe with any starter that anybody wants to throw out there. During the broadcast last night, you know, a lot of speculation, as there has been all summer, about Joe Maddon's situation. You were just around that team. Maddon's contract, of course, expires at the end of this season. What'd you pick up?
Well, my sense is, I mean, if you don't even have to read between the lines with the comments that Theo Epstein has made, there's clearly kind of a lack of faith in the ability of this team to consistently almost outperform what the expectations are, that there's been a level of underachieving, uninspiring baseball. And I think when you start to mention things like uninspiring, flat, that's an indictment on the leadership of the team to say we've got to lift. And, you know, and sitting in the office with Joe, first of all, I'm a huge Maddon fan. And if, yep, in fact, this is the end of Chicago, within 30 seconds, he would have three job opportunities. And they don't all have to be as a manager of a baseball team. There are networks that would put him in a booth immediately. There are teams, clearly, that would have him manage their teams. There's no doubt about his ability to do this. And I'm certainly the first guy that says it's in a sense BS to fire a manager because the manager can't manage. There's no doubt that a manager's ability to manage never changes. Now, whether the message that he's delivering doesn't get heard the same way, players don't react, that's a different argument. And maybe that's why Theo is using the language he's using. The idea that Joe Maddon's managerial skills or style doesn't work is garbage. It does, and it will again. But, you know, Joe starts talking about things like players and team chemistry and kind of why our road night record is so bad, and, you know, maybe they should go out and have, you know, have some dinner together and hang together as a group and stay out a little later than, you know, players today are so trained. And I'm not knocking it, but it's very different than when Joe first started in baseball, where you'd have guys roll in at 2 a.m. and they'd have 3 hours sleep, and many of them would produce and others wouldn't. There's very little, if any, of that's going on, or at least that anyone knows about. He was kind of implying that perhaps we should do anything to get ourselves in trouble or jeopardize our ability to perform, but some of those elements of team bonding and team chemistry don't exist anymore. And I got the sense that was somewhat of a slap at the establishment. And I don't mean just the Cubs only, but it seems like every organization promotes that type of behavior, you know, almost bed check stuff. And I just think he longs for the days where there wasn't such constraints and restraints and all that, not only on his players, but I think throughout the game. And I'm not sure he's going to go somewhere else and change it. But it did seem to fly in the face of conventional thinking now with most front offices, including his own. And it just feels like you got Epstein and Hoyer and the organization on one side and Joe kind of lining up on the other side. And I'm getting the sense more and more that this is the end, you know, barring some miracle run through a World Series and a title for Joe in Chicago. And that is, to me, it's absolutely not a knock or an indictment on Maddon. He'll get a job literally the same day if he wanted one. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and doesn't it feel like that the media and fans were kind of like the kids in a divorce when you mentioned sort of the byplay that's been going on, the comments being made by Theo, you know, what Joe's talking about? I remember earlier this year when he was asked about his contract situation, his comment was, Well, if it was about winning, it would already be done.
Exactly.
And he mentioned his record. You know, they had won the World Series. They had been to the postseason.
I think that's the point, though. Don't you think that's the point? I think that's why the language that Theo is using is away from his win-loss record. All they've done is go to the playoffs. I mean, look, the guy tomorrow for the rest of his life can walk the streets of Chicago, and he is a hero. Theo Epstein is a hero in Chicago for the rest of his life. That part is written in stone already. Madden can manage, written in stone. Madden wins games, written in stone. But the language that they use, and in particular, you know, Theo, is not about wins and losses. It's about inspired play. It's about overachieving. You never hear him say, we don't win games. You know, I don't see it directed at a win-loss mark, because in that case, you know, Joe's up there with the best in baseball over his tenure in Chicago. But I do think it's the language they use. And I will say this, I think you're exactly right about, you know, the sort of the children of the divorce, where, you know, they're feeling like, well, we got to pick a side here. And they have zero desire to pick any side. They love their parents equally. Is that while we were in Chicago, there certainly were some articles written that were not just anti-Joe or pro-Theo. There were certainly, we have to look at the record of Theo Epstein as well. This is not just a Theo issue. And I think the media is being cast into that role of as you said, children of divorced parents. I think there's not just a one opinion feeling in that city about this.
Yeah, 100%. And it feels like we're going to have a cordial split. And in 10 years, you know, or in 5 years, 7 years, when they have the reunion of the 2016 Cubs, Theo will come back from wherever he is. Maybe he's a Red Sox owner. Joe Madden will come back, and they'll give a hug, and they'll give a handshake, and everyone will celebrate.
Why wouldn't they? They both served an incredible, incredible purpose for each other and for that city and for that organization. Like, literally, mission accomplished. And every manager, whether it's Aaron Boone, Alex Cora, or, you know, Terry Francona, we are hired to eventually be fired. And it has nothing to do with our ability to manage a baseball game. I'm sorry. Joe Torre, manager of the year, fired. Terry Francona, manager of the year, fired. We just saw John Farrell, Dusty Baker, Joe Girardi win divisions, fired. It has nothing to do with your ability to X and O or manage baseball in that sense. There's all the other things that get you let go or get the other guy hired because the message isn't being heard. We need a fresh voice. The fresh voice could manage exactly the same way, but it's a fresh voice, and that seems to be the hill that the ownership and front offices, you know, want to climb up and lean on.
2 minutes to go. Two more topics. Domingo Germán yesterday gets put on leave. We'll see what kind of decision baseball comes down as it investigates him under their domestic violence policy. I think the ripple effects of this, Carl, is, boy, the comeback of Luis Severino all of a sudden seems even more important than it was, 3 days ago.
Without question. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And just as an aside and selfishly, it is bizarre. But on a personal note, while Germán is on this inactive list now, who did the Yankees call up to replace him? Mike King. And Mike King, his mom and dad, I was at their wedding in Utica, New York, what feels like 30 years ago. I've known Mike King since the day he was born. And on a very personal note, it's incredible to see him get this opportunity. And Brett Gardner singled him out in the post game last night by saying what a neat thing it is for a kid to get called up and thrust into a playoff race. And here we are celebrating with champagne. A couple of days ago, King was spraying champagne with his Double-A team. I don't anticipate him being a huge factor this season, maybe next season, but today's an opportunity after you celebrate a division title to get into a game. That would be neat. You're absolutely right, though, on a far more serious note, that the Germán situation means that Severino's in the spotlight. And it just goes to show you, again, while this has nothing to do with hits and errors and balls and strikes, that there are no sure things in baseball, and anything can happen. And this idea you know, that the Dodgers and Astros or Dodgers and Yankees are going to meet in the World Series, you have no clue whether it's injuries or a situation like this that presents itself for one of these teams. Get into the tournament. And if Severino can give you 5 innings or 4 innings or 7 innings, it is now more and it is so critical that he pitches well. Similarly, the idea that, you know, Paxton is pitching really well, it just means more of the load is going to have to be carried by other pitchers.
Next week, we're going to have Bruce Bochy on the podcast. Carl, I wrote the story for the San Diego Union-Tribune about him being hired. You know, that and it, that right. occurred to me when I was watching Aaron Boone last night celebrate the Yankees making winning the American League East. And he's now the first manager in Major League Baseball history to win at least 100 games in each of his first two seasons as a big league skipper. You and I got to hang out with Aaron Boone and Alex Cora. And it just seems bizarre to me on one level. On another level, it's not surprising because of what a positive person he is.
I think this ties into what we're talking about with the Madden stuff. And the reason that the Cubs hired Joe Madden was, A, he's a great manager, but he is also a great communicator. That word alone, communicator, has become so important and on so many levels. When you take somebody from a television booth, clearly they are in that booth because they can communicate a message. Now we need you to communicate our message to the players. We need you to be able to communicate with the players on a personal basis. The sort of first line for me now for manager is not experience. It's not your X and O ability. It is your ability to communicate. Whatever message it is, it's your ability to communicate. And Boone can do that. Cora can do that. Craig Counsell has done that incredibly well in Milwaukee, continues to do it. You sit in a room with Brian Snitker, you get the sense, my gosh, that guy can just speak. Like, he can talk to, he can relate, he can communicate. So critical. And forever, Bochy's been doing that. And I can't wait to hear his speech when he gets in to the Hall of Fame, because he's a great communicator. He's a funny guy. He can relate to his players. He can take the message from the front office. And if he has a desire to stay in baseball as a manager, somebody will hire him too. But I think, Buster, the game has changed now, that the most important trait of a guy that's going to be leading your team as a manager has got to be his ability to communicate on every level, media, player, front office, all those interpersonal skills and in front of camera skills. And the guys you just talked about all have it. And Joe Madden has it.
Have fun tonight communicating, Carl. I will be seeing you in Cleveland, I think, this weekend, right? You doing baseball tonight on Sunday?
We're doing it. We're back in the studio, though. We're in Cleveland on Sunday, but I will pass you in the air. As you go, I'll be leaving.
All right.
See you, bud.
The Mendoza Line with Sunday Night Baseball's Jessica Mendoza.
And on Sunday Night Baseball this week, we will be in Cleveland for the Phillies in Cleveland. Jess will be there. Jess, how are you doing this week?
Awesome. We're counting down, Buster. Last Sunday Night Baseball game of the year. Got the wild card game in the AL, and then postseason's here.
Yeah, and it's kind of works out nicely because the Indians might be in that wild card game, and we get to see them on the last Sunday of the season. But you're right, we're coming down to it. But before we get to all that, I'm going to do a cool thing on Saturday. I'm really excited about this. My daughter goes to college in Cleveland, so I'm going to go to a game with her and a couple of her friends on Saturday. And I was trying to figure out, you know, where to get tickets and you know, in the ballpark there and what would be the cool place. And I'm like, you know what? I want to be near the section where the guy's playing the drum, like that beat that goes on during the course of games.
How does it go,
and so that's
Buster?
I'm not going to do that again.
Come
bum,
on.
Bum. I feel like Matt Damon from Good Will Hunting, right? Bum, 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 bum. So I'm kind of excited about that. And they also have fireworks that night. If you were to pick out a place, if you were to pick out a place where you'd like to see a game from, any ballpark, what would be kind of cool? It's out of, besides sitting behind home plate, the obvious.
Yeah, I mean,
and you're not allowed to pick the monster seats. You're not allowed to pick the monster seats.
Well, okay. So there's two spots. There's just the outfield at Wrigley, and that the reason I say that is because I've never been somewhere where I felt more like I was in the game. And a bunch of that is, like, the fans that are out there. Like, and I think this goes for most stadiums. I think those people that sit in the outfield, I don't want to be total stereotype, but they tend to be just the most fun. You know, like, they're cheaper seats. Like, literally, I went for my first game in Chicago with my parents. This was a long time ago. And people ended up buying us shirts and drinks. And they're like, it's a first-timer. Like, I don't know. There's something about the atmosphere of the outfield in Chicago. And it's not like I'm a Cubs fan, but I was that day with the fans out there in the outfield. And being an outfielder, I brought my glove and just felt like I was in the game, which to me is the best feeling you can have at a game.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I wanted to sit out by the drums. I'm like, shoot, if you're going to see a ball game in Cleveland, and why not be, you know, close by that and see what that's like? Because I've always sit, watch games in the press box in Cleveland, and they actually, behind there, a lot of times they keep the glass closed and you can't really feel the drums. So if I can't hear you on Sunday morning, you'll know why. That might be more of a threat to my hearing than the Who was last week in Fenway Park.
I was
going to
say, between that and the Who concert, you're done, at least for a couple weeks.
There you go. So we just got done our conference call for prep for Sunday night, and I feel like that you stole my notes. Because I was had this elaborate presentation about how, yeah, we talk about the Indians and we talk about the Yankees and all their injuries, but take a look at the Indians, and then you just started rattling off all the names.
Yes, actually, I don't know if I told you this, but I have access to your computer. Lisa gave me the password, so I just kind of go in there. No, it's just so true when you pull up all the guys that have been injured, and I know we've had obviously a lot of Yankee games and that's been their storyline, but when you dive into this game, you're just blown away by the fact that, you know, names Kipnis, Naquin, Kluber, Ramirez, Clevinger, Carrasco, Salazar. I mean, these are their injuries. I mean, it's unbelievable how the fact that they're still in contention, they still have a great shot at the postseason, and yet they've been missing all of their huge names throughout a bulk of the season. So I give Tito a ton of credit, just as we gave Booney a ton of credit in managing, especially a young pitching staff that's really had to step in, and we've got Adam Plutko on Sunday to kind of lead that conversation.
Yeah, what is it about Tito you think that appeals to players? You know his personality.
I would say authentic, real, and you know this, Buster. You'd hope that managers would just know this by now, that just letting players understand exactly what you're thinking, no BS, just, hey, this is how it is, whether you want to hear it or not. I don't think anyone epitomizes that more than Tito. And there's times I'm almost like, okay, TMI, like, too much information. Like, he'll give you anything you want to know. He's not going to hold it back. But I think for a player, they know what he's thinking. And if he's mad, he's going to let you know. If he doesn't think something's right, he's going to put you in your place. And I just think it creates a culture starting at the top that, look, you need to be the person that you need to be a good teammate. You need to give to this team, all the things that are cliche and you talk about. But you also have someone that's going to get on your butt if you don't. And to me, that's Tito. Well, also, you know, enjoying the game. Shoot, 162 games. I don't think anyone has more fun as a manager than Terry Francona.
No, and as you were talking, the image of him, yeah, Trevor Bauer's last moment on a field in a game in an Indian
that's
uniform after he threw
too.
The ball. You know, and Tito just gives Trevor a piece of his mind, and then I think more happened when they went down into the runway after Tito got done with that pitching change. But you're right, he's going to be 100% real. As I mentioned, they're part of the three-team AL wild card chase. The Red Sox are very much on the fringe of that, so we're not going to talk about them. But to me, when you look at Oakland and Tampa Bay and the Indians now, and as you say, the Indians have done a great job overcoming injuries. So have the Rays, you know, 1 point losing Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow going down. Oakland looks so dangerous, Jess. Like, as they come down, you know, we've been talking about how, boy, if you're the Yankees, if you're the Astros, you want home field advantage. So you're going for the best record. You know what? I don't know if it might actually turn out to be good if you're the number two seed, because that means if Oakland advances, you don't have to play the Athletics, who've had success against both the Yankees and the Astros this year.
Well, and they're sneaky that way. I think a lot of teams, regardless, unless honestly it is the Astros. I was talking to AJ Hinch, the manager of the Astros, this week. He was saying going into Oakland is not a place that I want to be. And he talked about how tough every game has been. You know, they've lost, I think it's 6 of the 9 against them this season. And think about how good the Astros are and everything that they've been able to do and how healthy they've stayed with all their big dogs. And yet you get a team like Oakland, and when you break them down and look at their numbers, they do have a lot of, like, big guys, right? But they're still sneaky because they don't have the same attention of the Garrett Coles and Justin Verlanders and, shoot, like, go to the Yankees and Aaron Judge, all the American League names that you consistently hear. And I think that's a huge advantage for them. I think my only concern is how much with their bullpen and starting pitching they can go in a longer series. I feel like they are perfect for a one-game wild card. They are perfect for a division series. I wonder how they would do. And, of course, if they make it to a championship series, that is a win for Oakland.
All right, this week's poll question, who will be the next $400 million player? The first was Mike Trout, of course, and the options that I threw out there were Cody Bellinger, Mookie Betts, Francisco Lindor, the Indian shortstop, and Juan Soto. Of those four, who would you bet is going to be the next $400 million player?
Well, I voted, and I voted for Mookie Betts. And I noticed when I voted, that was the bulk of the response, which I actually hate because I always like to be. But it's hard. And that's not him just coming off an MVP year and being like, well, of course, you know, he's the hottest player as of recently, you know, last year winning what he did. It's just the fact, the kind of player that he is, the body that he has, I think, to be able to withstand, you know, length, to know, because if you're going to get $400 million, it means someone's paying you for a decade, basically. And I think to be able to commit to someone that you know is going to stay healthy. When you look at, you know, the Mickey Cabreras and the Albert Pujolses, and you see the back end of these contracts, and just really the question is there, can their body hold up? You look at Mookie Betts, and the guy is, he's not a huge guy. And as much as you could say, like, bigger muscles, big, you know, last longer, I see the way Mookie moves, the way he plays the game. I just feel like that's not only a great player, but it's going to be a great player for a very, very long time. And that's what gets you $400 million. It's not for the first 5 years. It's for the entirety of the 10 years.
Yeah, and you might turn out to be right. I voted for Francisco Lindor because he plays a premium position. The other guys are outfielders. Cody Bellinger might wind up at first base sometime, but Francisco Lindor is an excellent defender at a premium position. And Jess, he just seems to keep getting better and better and better, not only as a player, but in terms of how he carries himself in the clubhouse. I remember when I was in the Indians camp this spring, someone there told me, hey, you know, we had so many guys leave who have been part of the leadership. And he mentioned Michael Brantley, other guys, walking out the door. And he said, the big question is, who's going to step up and be a leader this year? And Lindor was hurt in spring training at the beginning of the year. But it's clear as the season has played out, Lindor has had, you mentioned Tito deserves a lot of credit for how the Indians have been held together. But, you know, other people have told me that Lindor's been great about that, too, because he's such a positive influence on a day-in and day-out basis. So not only, you know, would a team that would be signing him be getting a great shortstop and a great offensive shortstop, but also someone who's demonstrating that he can lead a team.
Absolutely. I mean, you just get a smile in the first 2 seconds you talk to him. And that, I mean, I feel like when I'm around him, I'm like, you know what? I'd love to be your teammate. And you know, Mookie has that feel to him, too. And I'm not saying trying to negate any of the other guys on that list, but there is nothing like what Frankie can do within minutes of being around somebody. And I think that goes to say when you're talking about young guys coming up, you're talking about trades coming in. Who's your leader? Who's your face? How do they make you feel? I don't know how much people put money on that. They should. That's a huge, huge asset that a player has. But to your point, the fact that he plays shortstop, oh, yeah, and he can hit, switch hit. Like, there's some other qualities there, too.
All right, Jess. Well, I will see you. I think you're going to make a brief appearance out in the stands, or are you going to avoid the drums over the weekend?
Only if you promise to keep telling me how they go, like even during the game. How do the drums go?
Boom, boom, yeah, boom, boom. Okay, yeah. Thanks, Jess.
Thanks, Buster. I'll see you.
Bleacher Tweets.
Rena Wong is a Twins fan who's known on Twitter as Rena Benina, and she helps us out with Bleacher Tweets every Friday. Rena, how you doing this week?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great, although Troy is not doing so great because he's stuck in the friend zone. And I know you might have some insight on that.
I do, a little bit. It might be a little bit unconventional, and it's not the most intuitive, but hear me out. Don't be too available. I know you are the friend. You're the one she does cool things with. You're the one she comes to for advice, like likes to hang out with, likes to spend time with. But pull back just enough so that she realizes that she can lose you at any time, but that you're still there for her as a human who's not just the go-to friend.
I can do
Troy?
That. I can do that. Yeah. No, so I should start saying no.
Yes. And if she asks why you're busy, don't give a straight answer.
Okay, I can do that. I actually did this the other day. I was like, you know what? Like, I just need a night for me, is what I said. I don't know. Should I say something different? Should I come up with something cooler?
No, good for you. That's perfect. I think putting yourself first and not letting her think that your world revolves around her is perfect.
Okay.
Yeah, just for the record, Rena, I gave this advice to him like 5 days ago, and he completely ignored me. And you, on the other hand, when you say it, he's listening very intently. Says a lot about me.
I'll take the inside advice from a female, from a young female who knows what she's talking about. I think she's a little more with the times, Buster, no offense.
Yeah, as opposed to an old dude, you're 100% right. All right, Rena, let's get to this week's tweets.
Sounds good. Kicking it off for us, we've got Kyle Benning at Kyle_Benning. Assuming the Cubs don't make the playoffs, which of the following players is most likely to start the 2020 season in a different uniform? Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, or Kyle Schwarber?
Yeah, Chris Bryant. Look, I wrote a story last winter about how the Cubs at the general manager meetings communicated to other teams, hey, if you got an idea on Chris Bryant, we are all ears. Like, we are open to talking about him. He's now just 2 years away from reaching free agency. He's represented by Scott Boras, who almost always takes his clients into free agency. If the Cubs are looking to shake things up and turn over the roster, I think he absolutely would be the guy, the most likely to go among those three guys.
Do you think Kyle Schwarber could be a good option, a cheaper option, per se, for a home run guy? Do you see him still in a uniform in 2020?
I got to tell you, Rena, like, he's been reminding us in the second half of just how good he could be, right? He's been a force increasingly, and that's what the Cubs have always thought he's going to be. And he's not horrific defensively. He's actually become okay. And, you know, I think if they trade Bryant, it's because they don't know if he's necessarily sort of all in long term with their future. Again, he's closing in on free agency, where I think they absolutely believe that Kyle Schwarber could be part of their future.
Yeah, and it'd be great to see him further develop as a player as well with the Cubs. Next, we've got Sterling at StirRide73. If the Red Sox have to let Mookie go and endure a rebuild, how long before they're competing for the World Series again? Can they even do this with their spoiled fan base?
I don't think you'll ever see, you know, the Red Sox go the full rebuild tanking mode, but it's going to be a while, Sterling. Like, there's no doubt whoever takes over the baseball operations there is a long list of things that they have to do. As we've been talking about, the credit card bill has come due.
Yeah, absolutely. Next, we've got Chris Brock at ChrisBrock75. Who do you see as the next manager to reach the 2,000th win threshold? An old guy coming back for one more ride like Buck Showalter, or perhaps one of the younger analytically inclined managers like A.J. Hinch or Dave Roberts, or maybe nobody.
Yeah, Chris, I think you nailed it. I think those two guys, Hinch and Roberts, are the two guys to do it. And A.J. Hinch, he's won a World Series. He's considered to be one of the best managers in baseball. And I had a conversation recently with an executive about Dave Roberts, and it was about how much he's gotten better as a manager. He just keeps improving and gets more comfortable in that role.
Yeah, I would agree. And plus, Buck is 63, and he only has like 1,500 wins. I just don't really see him coming back for another 7 years or so to get to 2,000.
Yep.
Next, we've got Nick Drews at Righty Drews. With all of the home run records being set this year thanks to the new aerodynamic ball, do any other seasons come to mind where records were being broken similar to 2019's asterisk-worthy season?
Yeah, 1987 was a weird year because all of a sudden there was a big spike in home runs, and I can't tell you the reason why. that was actually a few years before I think steroids became really prevalent in baseball. And look, if you go back and look at the numbers in the 90s, where for years and years and years, it was like an exclusive thing to hit 500 home runs. And the list of 500 home run hitters like doubled in 10 years through the steroid era. So those would be the two periods. And then, you know, as Babe Ruth became more popular and teams in the 1920s began to see how much fans were responding to home runs, there was a huge spike in numbers then. I'm sure it was because of how they regulated baseballs. At that time, it was about the same time that they outlawed spitballs and didn't let pitchers deface the balls the way that they had in the first two decades of Major League Baseball.
Great, yeah. And, of course, 1961 is the most obvious one of all, but I think those other two seasons are worth reading at and looking a little bit more into. Lastly, we've got P.K. Steinberg at P.K. Steinberg, who has a question for me and Troy. So since there's some new Baseball Tonight podcast, New Blood, the listeners want to know, what are our walk-up songs?
Ladies first.
All right, Rena, go ahead.
I've given this a lot of thought. Last night, I couldn't go to sleep initially because of this, because I think this is an important answer. But I would probably have to go with Mr. Brightside by The Killers. It's been
great choice.
One of my favorite songs. Thank you. Yeah, and everyone knows it and loves it. I mean, I can see it being like a Baby Shark moment where everyone just goes nuts.
Great choice.
That's fun.
I also stayed up really late till about 9 o'clock trying to think about this answer, and I came up with a home and away song. I don't know if that's how this works, but my home song is going to be Bet On It. It's from High School Musical 2, sung by Troy Bolton. That song's kind of my jam. Makes me feel like I can do anything. And then my on the road song, Smooth Criminal, the Michael Jackson version, one of my favorite songs of all time.
Wow. You know, as you just prefaced that, I you know, harken back to what we're talking about with the friend zone. Yeah, you're in the friend zone because you're in bed every night at 8:30. I mean, come on, dude. Right? And also, here's the other thing. You're saying you're not sure if this how this works, home and road music?
Yeah.
What ballpark have you ever gone to where they play music for the opposing players of their choice?
I don't know. I feel like I could change the system if I had a walk-up song.
I don't think so. All right, Rena, I appreciate your help this week, and thanks to you for your advice to Troy, because he really needs it.
You're welcome, and keep us posted, Troy. And if you can work in a little High School Musical, I think that will also get you out of the friend zone a little bit quicker.
Okay, well noted. I will certainly keep you updated, Rena.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
That's it for today. My thanks to Carl Ravitch, to Jessica Mendoza, to Rena Wong, and to Troy Farkas, who may forever be in the friend zone. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.